have you done the HIPAA stuff internally for yourself? Well, no. Well, okay, what are you complaining about? You're doing just as bad as your client.
It's hypocritical. Right. Yeah, it's exactly.
It's hypocritical. Ha! 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 Ha!
You're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Michelle Lombard from Georgia Spine Orthopedics, and you're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast.
Thank you for that intro. Welcome to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast. My name's David Sims of Security First IT, and joining me is Donna Grindle Carden. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning, David.
So today's episode is going to be cool.
I'm excited about it. It's going to be fun.
Yep. So this is, we did an interview, and we just got off the interview, so you know, we had to do it first to kind of see what it was like time-wise. So we're going to probably cut this into two parts because we had a fantastic discussion with Gary over at Black Talon Security.
Yes.
And talk about a lot of crazy stories. But, there's a couple things that went on during this interview. One is I look like a bobblehead agreeing with him and shaking my head about the crazy stuff, and just the whole time my head's moving all over the place. So it was crazy. And the other thing is, like, by the end of it, my palms are all sweating and I'm like hyperventilating over here. I'm like, hope this stuff never happens to me. I am not the person that says, oh, that will never happen. I'm the guy that's like, oh my God, I hope that never happens.
I know. It's our job to be paranoid. That's what we're supposed to do. Always worry about protecting, you know, the people, the business, and the data.
Yeah. So if you're like me, you might want to get a bag to breathe into during this one. It can get a little hairy, but it's good.
So, Gary has done some forensics work. Long story how we met, but his company, Black Talon Security, we've worked on several projects together, and I invited him on because every time he and I are having a conversation, I'm like, we have got to get this on the show and do an episode where we can share some of this. And he thankfully agrees with us about the importance of educating not only, you know, the folks that need to be following HIPAA compliance, but businesses in general, as well as the MSPs that are supporting them. And our conversation is, I think, hitting on a lot of places. And thankfully, he's like us. He can run around in all the different directions.
Yeah.
So I'm ready to get to that whenever you are, Chief.
All right. Well, since we have a lot in this interview, we're not going to waste any time here, and we're going to dive into it right after a word from our sponsors.
2/3 of small businesses that experience a cybersecurity breach end up closing their doors within 6 months. Cyber criminals are targeting your practice and coming after your most sensitive data. Visit us online and schedule a time to talk about what you can do to protect yourself, your patients, and your practice. Our website is securityfirstit.com. That's securityfirstit.com.
Does your business work with medical practices? As a medical practice business associate, do you realize that if you have access to patient information, you have to follow the same HIPAA rules as your client? Call Carden today at 678-292-5001 so they can assess your privacy and security practices to help ensure you are protected and prepared. Visit CardenHQ.com to learn more.
All right, so today we have a guest with us. Welcome to the show, Gary from Black Talon.
Welcome.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and Black Talon. Is it Black Talon or Black Talon something else?
It's
Talon Security.
Black Talon Security.
There we go. I knew there's another word in there somewhere.
That's all right. It's good to know your guess, right?
I had it pulled up and I can't find the screen anymore. I got too many things going on.
It's all good. We call ourselves Black Talon usually, so it's no worries.
Well, that's what I was, you know, every time Donna and I talk about you, it's just Black Talon. So I'm not used to saying Black Talon Security. It's just, right. You know, when you say Black Talon, yeah, you assume security when you say Black Talon. So,
let me give you a little background about myself. I kind of cut my teeth as a database programmer back in the early 90s. I built one of the very first oral surgery, practice management, software applications, actually from the dorm room of my college. My dad was a practicing surgeon at the time, and he's like, hey, I got this idea. We need specialty software for the OMS space. And he had an idea. I had the coding skills. So we basically built this business from the dorm room of my school. And then around 1999, I had this idea. Oh, there's this thing called the internet. What can we do here? Maybe we can take this application and throw down some servers and get people to start using an internet product. So we built out a whole data center. And by 2002, we had about 2,000 users logging into our data centers and running this practice management software over, you know, what we now call the cloud, right? So that was really my first introduction to cloud computing and really security. We had installed some pretty high-end Cisco intrusion protection systems back in 2001. Mm-hmm. And shortly after we installed these devices, my engineer came in. He's like, hey, man, we got a major problem. The system just locked out most of our users. It detected some type of attempted intrusion. So long, long story short, there actually was an attempted attack on our network. And we ended up calling the FBI from New York City. And they sent agents up, and they ended up arresting the guy out of Florida for trying to break into the system. That was really my first, you know, detailed experience with law enforcement and cyber. And even back then, you're talking 18 years ago, 19 years ago. I mean, it was going on back then. And obviously, from that point forward, it's escalated dramatically. We know the world we live in now related to cyber. We founded Black Talent in 2017, basically out of necessity. You know, the job that I was working at previously, I was getting phone calls saying, hey, you know, our practice got hit by a cyber attack and we've lost all our data. It's all encrypted. You know, what can you guys do to help? And I wasn't really in a position to do anything. And then I said, you know what? Maybe there's something here. You know, maybe I can actually do something to help people, not only to prevent, but help them recover. So a bunch of us got together, some really technical folks and security folks got together and formed this company. And now we service clients in healthcare, in the financial sector, legal, accounting, et cetera. And what we do is we try and prevent cyber attacks by, you know, utilizing some pretty sophisticated techniques. But the flip side of our business is we also do incident response, breach response, forensics investigations, things like that for victims of attacks. And so that's, you know, that's the other side of our business that, you know, unfortunately we do a lot of. I wish we didn't have to, but that's just the nature of the industry. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely unfortunate. And we have been working with forensics teams now for years because we need to know what's happening when these attacks occur. And so many people are like, oh, well, you know, the number of times that we've heard even IT folks, well, it was a ransomware attack. I did a nuke and pave, wipe restore, whatever. We're good. We're back up.
Right. It's a huge problem. It's a huge problem.
No, we're not good.
Yeah. It's a really, really sad situation because I think what happens here is a couple things. The majority of the IT companies that service these smaller businesses and smaller healthcare providers, they don't understand the laws, i.e. your world, Donna. They don't understand the state laws. They don't understand the sophistication of these attacks. And then I think there's this protectionism as well. They don't want other people to know, one of our clients got hit. They're under investigation now. Instead of doing the right thing and advising the client, hey, look, under the HIPAA laws, ransomware attacks considered a data breach until you prove otherwise, right, Donna? I mean, that's the law. And they're like, oh, you know what, Mrs. Business Owner, you know, doctor, don't worry about it. We'll make this go away. That super high speed backup I sold you for $3,000. We're gonna make this thing work. We'll get you back up in a couple of days. Meanwhile, they have no clue what happened. How long were they in the system? Well, as we know, many of these threat groups have persistence on the network for weeks prior to launching their ransomware attack. Many of these threat groups, almost all the major threat groups now, steal the data first and then hit you with the ransomware. Yeah. So if your IT vendor comes in and just quote unquote cleans up the mess and sweeps everything under the rug, you're fine. It's all made to go away. And then your patient data starts showing up, you have a major problem, right? You have a you know, a legal and PR disaster on your hands that you can't even begin to fathom. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a challenge that we see a lot. And then some of the doctors, they make poor decisions, right? They're like, oh, I have a friend that can fix this, or I know someone, or I'll try and do this myself and I'll just pay the ransom. you know, and it turns into this horrible, horrible situation that we often get involved with, and they've done way more damage from a compliance standpoint and then from a business continuity standpoint than just doing it right from the beginning. You know, just like when folks engage you, Donna, you know, people understand, like, I got to do this right or I can have a big problem here. So.
Oh, I love the ones that engage me. I review everything and I say, based on what you've told me, you have a data breach that needs to be reported. And they're like, we're going to have to review all that you've given us and get back to you.
It's
really never hear from them again.
Well, you know, we've had those cases too, you know, yeah. where people have called us and, you know, we know the specific type of ransomware, they're the modus operandi of the specific threat group. And we tell them there's a high risk that they stole your data already. And like, well, I talked to my IT guy, he said that probably didn't happen. I was like, well, how do you know that?
Gosh.
Right. Well, we looked at the firewall. Well, how long does your firewall keep logs? Right.
Logs?
Most of the attacks. Yeah. A day.
What?
If that, most of the attacks we deal with, there's no data in the firewall logs. Right. And that's why, as Don alluded to, this forensic investigation where you basically look at every bit and byte on these hard drives and machines and operating systems to determine what happened is the final deciding factor as to whether or not something happened. I think everyone wants to believe what they want to believe. So the second someone tells them, oh, you're fine. Yeah. We're good. We're good. Right.
Yep. Yeah. I'll latch onto that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But both of you know what happens in the end, the healthcare provider owns the breach, regardless of what anyone told them. Right. It's their patient records. It's their practice. They own it. And if that was a decision based on improper advice, what are they going to do? They're going to blame it on the IT folks who gave them the wrong advice. You're going to go fight that out in court. You know, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. So that's what David and I talk about often is there's a distinct difference between IT and security. And when you don't understand that, you're going to need forensics at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's a challenge. And if you look outside and David, you know, I'd be interested to hear your experience, but if you look outside the healthcare space, the larger small business and medium business market, most of these companies and organizations, they get it, right? Their managed service provider, which is really what they are, you know, will say, hey, look, you know, we're not a security firm. And frankly, you know, we shouldn't be checking our own work, right? We would recommend you have a third party come in and audit to make sure that, A, we're doing our job and, you know, you as an organization can do everything possible to mitigate risk. Mm-hmm. But for some reason in the small healthcare space and, you know, Donna, we've done some, you know, some work, some cases together, you know, even some of these bigger practices and groups, you know, there's limited security there to almost nothing. Right. And the fact is that these IT vendors don't have the tools. They don't have the, you know, the certifications and frankly, they're not doing this 8-10 hours a day, every single day. Their primary focus is keeping the computers up and running, updating, you know, helping when things don't work. And that's great. And they play a really critical role. And a lot of MSPs do a fantastic job at that. But it is definitely a niche, you know, within IT in terms of cybersecurity. And I think that's a huge mistake. Right, because every single data breach we've dealt with, every single one, 100%, guess what? They've all had firewalls. They've all had antivirus software. They all say they had an IT person that they thought was protecting them, and then they get hit. Mm-hmm. Right? And then all of a sudden, the game changes. And that's a challenge. So I think more and more IT vendors have to start accepting the fact that we're not operating like it's 2017. If you honestly examine the types of threat groups that are attacking our healthcare infrastructure right now, this is no joke. These are operations that are generating hundreds of millions of dollars that employ some of the most, you know, sophisticated code out there, right? This isn't Dave sitting in a basement of his mom's house in Florida, right?
In
I guess
a hoodie.
The Twitter guy did that, like, so that throws that concept out, right? But that's a one-off, right? That's a one-off. But
well, that was when in 2000 what?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. Wait, what year is it? I'm not even sure anymore.
Let's really kind of. If you don't mind, I really want to slow down just a bit on the part about IT companies aren't cybersecurity companies.
Right.
Because we're a managed security service provider, which this whole term, it's really muddied down a lot to what it is now, what it used to be and all that. Because I know people who call themselves managed security service providers, and they don't do anything that is in the support side of IT. They only focus on aspects of security, but even then they may not go down deep into some of the levels you do. So it's very convoluted as to what all that means. But aside from that, I understand where my company needs to draw the line. Like, I know that we are not a cybersecurity company. We're a security focused company with cybersecurity tools. And so from a protection standpoint, I completely understand where we're at. From a forensic standpoint, I understand we don't do any of that in-house and we have to bring people in for that. And I think a lot of MSPs or MSSPs think they can do that. And I think some of the vendors that are selling these tools are overselling their ability to say, you can come in and do forensics with these tools and all this kind of stuff. And so I wanted to kind of slow that down a little bit so you can speak to the MSPs and MSSPs that are listening to say, what really is the difference between what IT provides as quote unquote cybersecurity and what a true cybersecurity vendor is providing?
Right. Yeah. So fantastic question. So what do we typically see? So for most managed service providers, they're going to provide a couple layers of protection, right? You start with the exterior, right? The internet facing. So you have a firewall, and the firewall can do a couple different things. Depends on, you know, obviously the brand, the sophistication of the device. Some of it is, you know, a basic firewall. Then you can layer in maybe antivirus software, intrusion protection, you know, things like that. So that adds a couple different layers, maybe looking at, you know, the traffic coming in to that firewall and inspecting it without getting too technical, right? So that's something that a lot of IT or MSPs provide. And then what do we see on the inside? Well, we see antivirus protection, right? And yes, that's obviously important. I don't think any person in the security field or MSP world would ever say you don't need antivirus.
You might be surprised.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we got to, yes. All right. So I will eat my words on that one. But,
I have seen some crazy discussions in some of these forums.
Yeah. No, I hear you. So, you know, they provide that. Patch management is what I see a lot of MSPs provide. Obviously very important because we all know that, you know, some of these applications, if properly patched, may not be vulnerable to an attack. So I see that kind of, to your point, all over the map. You know, that's one of the things that security firms do is they look for all these vulnerabilities and they're supposed to have a patch management solution in place. And we come across all these devices that aren't being patched. So, you know, I think sometimes good MSPs are doing a great job at that. And others definitely struggle, whether it's the tools they're using or their ability to keep track of the client's assets and make sure that their tools are installed, which we see all the time. We'll go in and deal with an attack. There's 50 devices in there. And when we do our investigation, we're like, well, these 10 computers didn't even have their management tool installed on it. They didn't even have AV. And the managed service provider is like, wow, I don't know how that happened.
Yeah. You know?
And a lot of times it's not always their fault. The client can go out and buy devices or it's a migration from another MSP, et cetera, whatever. Yeah. Not trying to point blame.
No. But I mean, to a point, there is some, and sometimes it's laziness and other times it's kind of overselling yourself. Like you have too many endpoints you're trying to manage and you can't do it properly.
Right.
I mean, in my MSP, MSSP service, we always find systems that even though they're the under patch management and all that, the patches aren't happening. The, you know, sometimes the backups are failing. I mean, that's the reason why we go through and audit everything all the time, because just because you set it up to do something, it doesn't mean it's going to work. Definitely. You have to constantly look at it and evaluate. Is this working? Did it miss something? Is it backing up? Can it be recovered? All these things that have to be done, or it's part of the management piece to what you're supposed to be providing. And a lot of times MSPs will just set it and forget it. And then they don't realize until something happens, oh man, this thing hasn't actually patched in months.
Right? Well, yeah, they're relying on those tools instead of, you know, oh, well, we don't have to worry about it. It's fine. And everybody thinks somebody else is checking, which is a huge reason that we encourage all business associates, covered entities, any business really, if you're counting on your MSP to keep you protected, then you need to have regular reports showing they're reviewing the tools and that output from the tools. You know, how many devices are you tracking? Well, I know I bought 50, but you're tracking 47. What's going on?
Right.
So it's absolutely essential, because if you have them do that, doesn't matter whether it's being oversold, or, as David mentioned, laziness or overconfidence is what I generally think that it is. If you are requiring them to give you the reports and don't let them just throw a big, you know, ticket list at you, I want to see proof that this is working, because guess what? 5 years from now, someone's potentially going to ask me to prove you were doing your job today.
Right. Yeah. Look.
And that's our big loop that we get in with IT providers and managed service providers. And it's something that David will share with you offline some of the things he's running into. Maybe you can help him on some of those forums.
Right. Yeah. So I think you nailed it, Donna. And I see this a lot. There's egos at play here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's people peddling things and technology and solutions, and A, they aren't using them properly, and B, they pretend that they are impervious, right? Yep. So, you know, talking about forensics, I'm going to give you the perfect example. We did that huge breach down in the Maryland, Virginia, DC area that occurred a couple months back. And a majority of these healthcare providers were sold a backup solution. Now, in every single case we dealt with, and we did a lot of those recovery efforts, they had a legit backup solution. Yeah, not a $200 hard drive they plugged in, a RAID dedicated backup solution, without getting too technical. Guess what? Every single one of those devices had a documented vulnerability. And when the threat actors hit the system, you know what they did? They scanned the network for vulnerabilities. They're like, oh, backup solution vulnerable. They bypassed all the security measures on those devices and wiped them clean. Every single fingerprint was identical. The second we got in there, we knew we were going to find their RAID backup system. This was about a $2,000 device. This wasn't cheap. Mm. All wiped clean, right? And the healthcare providers and the businesses that we work with, they were shocked. They're like, I spent all this money on this device. How is this even possible? We were, quote, and they said it multiple times, we were told by the sales reps that these things were ransomware proof. I was like, nothing's ransomware proof. That's the first problem, right? So I said, look, the criminals go out and buy the same stuff we use, right? That's how it works. They buy the same antivirus, the same firewalls. They figure out how to get around these devices. These backup devices had a documented vulnerability. That's how they got in. They didn't have to crack passwords. They were able to use a tool that bypassed all security. You know, so I think some of these statements that are made to the executives and business owners and healthcare providers are like, hey, you're fine if you put this one piece of technology in, mm-hmm. right? This is the Lamborghini of backup devices. And they bet everything on that,
yeah.
right? If something happens,
oh, yeah.
roll back to that backup. And guess yeah. what? These guys took out all the cloud backups too. These businesses were looking at 100% data loss. And they can't fathom that, because they've literally been sold a bill of goods that now can't be delivered.
Yeah.
So did you save the day?
Well, I mean, in all the cases, so we found one client was actually, we were able to recover data that somehow they missed, but everyone else, the ransom had to be paid. You can't break the encryption. No one can break the encryption for the most part. You know, we live in this false world where, like, oh, we're going to go to this magic website and download a decryption tool and all our files are magically going to unlock. We've yet to ever see that. Now, if you happen to get really lucky and it's a really old version of the ransomware, yes, there are websites that are available now that'll give you a publicly available decryption key, but you just don't see it. Many of these are double encrypted. It did.
Yeah, it's changed.
And there were some larger attacks where if someone got the key, you could give the key to everyone else and unlock their files. They don't do that anymore. They double encrypt almost all these systems now. They have a master key. So if someone pays a huge sum of money, they will turn a master key and they'll unlock, 100 victim systems. Or they will be able to split the keys and say, if you just want to pay for your 10 servers or your 5 servers or your 1 server, this is the amount of money they will give you a key just for those devices. Mm-hmm. So they got smart, right? Because they knew what people were doing. They were sharing the key. But, they know the game, right?
Their business plan accordingly, just like we do.
Yeah, it's illegitimate business.
Yeah. So. And just to be clear, just because your IT guy says that you should encrypt your systems doesn't mean that you should click on efficient email to encrypt them. That's not really the way you want to have your systems encrypted.
Yeah, that's right.
I haven't seen that yet, but I can imagine.
I think too many people still believe it won't happen to me.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, it's just like, you know, security is always too expensive till it's not, you know, it's too bad and too heavy until it's not enough. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, why didn't you do more? And one of my favorite is the best way to get fire insurance is to the building across the street to burn to the ground. You know, it's the same kind of thing. And that's why we want to be able to tell some of these tales, if you will, that they will never be made public. You and yeah. I, we all know, and the number of times that we've all heard an IT vendor stand up and say, I mean, Gary, now we're both at a conference that I recall, an IT vendor says, well, if you're using ours, you don't have to worry at all. You're secure.
Yeah, it's craziness. I mean,
and it's the more that we can tell people that's not true without having to say, that guy's lying.
Yeah. I've even seen IT providers say, I would rather spend my money on a backup solution than security so that I can recover when something happens. Yeah. How crazy is that?
I'm going to flat out say it's an outrageous statement, right? Because if you don't understand what's going on right now when you make a statement like that, or you don't care to understand, right? You're living like it's 2017 or 2018. The second your data gets stolen nowadays, it's game over for your organization. So you know what we see, to your point, David? We see two ransom notes now. Now, I get it, there could be tons of ransom notes, but two different types of ransom notes on systems. The first one is pay us 50 grand, for argument's sake, to decrypt your data, to get the keys. Pay us $50,000 not to publish all your data. And you know what they'll do? They'll show you a screen capture of all the data they've taken. You'll see all the folders on your systems, et cetera. Almost, I would say twice a week, I get reports showing me all the systems across the US where the data has been stolen. You can see the name of the organization, the amount of data that they was taken, little sample snippets of the data, et cetera. It's craziness, right? And people don't think, to Donna's point, it's ever going to happen to me until it does. And then they're like, oh, well, you know, I'm just a, you know, five office healthcare provider. Who cares? How's an operation coming from China or Russia ever going to find me or target me? And then all of a sudden they turn around like, uh-oh, we got a problem. Right? We walk Monday morning, we have a problem. And the problem is big, right? And both of you have probably seen this. The days of recovering in a day or two are pretty much non-existent. I don't really care how good your backup solution is. When every single one of your computers is fully encrypted with ransomware and littered with hacking tools, that's what we see when we do these forensic investigations. We just completed one for a specialty practice in the Northeast here, and we found 20 different hacking tools on their network. You know, wow. So what do? You how run your backup, right?
How
you
long have those been there, Gary?
So they deployed them 2 weeks, almost exactly 14 days before they launched the ransomware attack. So they had persistence for 2 weeks. Some of the hacking tools were tools that gave them privilege escalation capabilities to get administrative rights. Many of the tools were designed to hack passwords. There was credential harvesting tools, which basically means every time you go to a website or an application, this tool grabs the username and password and the web address you type in, you know, some compromising accounts potentially that way. So these were all in the system. And, you know, that's shocking for the client. You know, when in a forensics investigation, you know, there's a 1.5 page list of all the tools that were deployed on their network. And the point being is, if you just kind of make that go away and restore that server in a couple workstations, and you don't understand these tools are on the network, it's going to be a really bad day in a couple of days, right? When the system
just
put them back on. They want to get back in.
Yeah.
We did a forensic investigation for a healthcare provider up in Connecticut. And the first problem was when we were on site doing the breach response, the doctor walked in and handed us an external hard drive. And he's like, I don't think I'm going to have a problem. I back up every day and I swap these devices out and I bring them home. We're like, okay, that's great news. Okay. So we plug it in and you know what I'm going to say, there was no data on it. It was literally blank. And you could see his face turn bright red. His exact words, I'll never forget this. you're telling me I've been bringing a blank drive home with me every single night. And unfortunately, we had to say yes. You know, and
how long had it been going on? How long had it been doing it?
2 years. So you know what happened? Switched IT companies, and the new IT company didn't configure the backup properly, and it wasn't tagging the right file. So he had, you know, they had no practice management, no EHR, no X-rays, all gonzo. So they were all encrypted. And then he said, well, you know, I also have a cloud backup. And you know what happened? The cloud backup, they didn't stop the database service. So it wasn't backing up any database files. So even though the cloud backup was kicking off every night, they weren't getting any valuable data. So long, long story short, you know, they hit about a dozen out of the 20 computers before they realized they had a problem and shut the network down, and we got in there. But upon forensics investigation, we found out that they installed 3 different screen sharing apps in order to get back in. And probably the thought process is if someone comes in, they'll be like, I don't recognize the screen sharing app, you know, erase this. But what are the odds they find all 3? So not only did they do that, but the forensics investigation proved that any of the computers, laptops that had webcams, they turned the webcams on. So not only, you know, were they gaining access through screen share apps, but they were able to watch patients in the office. And then there was a female doctor, and when we shared that information, she basically broke down in tears. She's like, so when I was sitting at my desk, they were watching me. I'm like, well, if it was during this period of time, then yes. And then that's when she realized how bad it was. I mean, just, it's horrible. Your heart breaks when you see these types of things and have to share it with them, and you feel completely violated. You know, any of us would feel that way.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, if somebody breaks into your car and steals something when you're parked in a parking lot, you feel that violated thing. And it's really tough to get people to understand that, because obviously when it's happened to someone, it's not like they're willing to tell.
All right, Don, I don't know about you. That was a fantastic first session interview, because we're definitely gonna have to finish up on the second session of this interview. And then, as we mentioned, not in the first session, but I'll give it away. we did talk about in the last half of it where we're going to have him back to talk about some of the preventative measures that businesses and MSPs can take, since, you know, basically all we did was scare people to death during this, this one interview.
But we're going to get into a little bit more detail of the scary.
Yeah.
In the second part of our interview with Gary. And it is kind of like more of the holy crap stuff.
Yeah, it's more specific stories or examples of what happened, not could have happened, but did happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but, yeah,
I'm looking forward to getting feedback on both of these episodes, and really glad that we had this opportunity. And I'm looking forward to when we bring him back on again, when we can all work out our schedules later this year.
Yep. So this is unfortunately going to be one of those ones where it's probably not going to be the very next time, you know, the next episode is probably not going to be where we start talking about the preventative things and all that, because we got to schedule time to get him back on. But, man, I can't wait. Can't wait to talk to him more and hear what he's got to say, because he's in the trenches. You know, it's funny, because when people ask me about some of the response to breaches and ransomware and all that, I'm like, fortunately, thank God, I have not had to deal with that with any of my clients yet. So everything I'm talking about are, you know, stories from other people. So to hear it from people that are, you know, firsthand accounts of dealing with these things, I love to hear it. It scares the crap out of me when I do.
It reminds you need to keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. Whatever I'm doing is it's right. So, but part of that, honestly, part of it is not just what is Security First IT doing right, but it's also, what are my clients doing right? Because I am very, very upfront in telling people, we are only providing a part of your cybersecurity program. You have got to be in on this or it will not work. But even if everything's in there, you're still not 100%. There is always a risk. There is a crack in the window somewhere that somebody can get in. What we're trying to do is just make it harder than your neighbor, so they'll go and break in your neighbor's network.
There you go. That's it. That's the plan.
Oh,
just,
man,
be faster than the other one running from the bear.
Yeah, or just push them down. One or two.
Moving sideways.
Yeah. I've been outside practicing my sideways running. so that if I go see a bear.
All right.
Anyway, so that is our show for today, folks. Thanks for listening. Remember to follow us and share us out on your favorite social media site and rate our podcasting app if you're listening to it on that. And just help us spread the word, because we're getting out some terrific information that is well worth the price you pay. So remember, for Donna and myself, that HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.